Today on the AF Podcast, we perform our annual high wire act for you, the people, as we wrap up the year with the MVPs of 2018. We break down and discuss the MVPs of the last 12 months in sports, music, the culture, and everything else in between. Thank you for your support, as always. I'm thanking you in advance already. South Shore Ave is available wherever you listen to your podcasts. Any podcast that comes from South Shore Ave, you can listen and subscribe to them on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, as well as Spotify. And you can also head to southshoreave.com to listen and subscribe to them as well, and to check out my entire catalog of podcast shows. Once again, that's southshoreave.com. It's the Ave Podcast with Cal C on South Shore Ave Radio.
Welcome to the Ave Podcast with Cal C on South Shore Ave Radio.
Welcome to the year-end wrap-up episode of the Ave Podcast. We've been doing this annually since 2016. We call it the MVPs of 2018, where we talk about people and entities that had a great year in sports, the culture, and everything else in between. And with everyone keeping up annual holiday traditions such as drinking more eggnog, shopping for Christmas gifts for the family members to the point of causing themselves migraines, the reappearance of black cake to everybody's lives, arguing with your relatives about whether or not they want to hear Christmas in Queens from Run DMC or listen to some Parang. But much like those holiday traditions, I want to keep up with my annual tradition for this episode and wrap this all up with my guest. You know him, you love him, to the point that some listeners last year contacted me and wondered if he needed a hug to go in, you know, into the new year. People are generally concerned for his well-being, feeling like he was down or perpetually grumpy. So we've given him a shot of Red Bull and vodka to boost his energy like Popeye the Sailor Man. Please welcome back past contributor and South Shore Ave family member, Mr. Sean Adonis. How you doing, sir?
Yes, sir. I mean, it's a lot of pressure to bring up the level of joy this year, man. But I mean, I got my TD Bank app on my phone, and I see all the debt I'm accumulating for these gifts. So I'm not sure I could manufacture, you know, this cheery disposition. So I warn people in advance, man.
So I guess in my little intro, I guess you're the one of the people that had the migraine sometime this week.
Yeah, still got it, bro. Still got it. That migraine's called debt. Christmas debt. Love is expensive, bro. Love don't come cheap. Family or not.
And to keep up with tradition, what would a podcast be without a drink in our hands to end off the year? And I'm waiting for, you know, until we get sponsored by a liquor company to keep this to like one brand only. But until then, Sean, you know, let the people know what you have while I grab my glass.
What you just heard me gargle was some Crown Royale, brother. Mm-hmm. And I'm doing it sophisticated. You know, like when you see on all those movies where the rich people, they got it in a crystal bottle with the, I don't know what it's officially called, the stopper on top.
Yeah.
That's what I got, bro. Mm-hmm. I got to admit, I got it in my house now. So I was quite sophisticated in pouring my drink. You know, I only felt it was that to set the mood, I had to put on a bathrobe and, you know, get a cigarette with one of those long tip filter things, man. You know what I'm saying? It's the whole mood, bro.
Keep it all the way. You got the house slippers to go with the whole look?
Oh, bro, with the whole mood. I slid down here to the couch.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what I'm drinking right now. I'm having some a drink call, and I know I'm going to butcher this name, but I'm going to try my very best here. I'm drinking some Bambunko. That's the white rum for the native land of Haiti. One of my good friends put me onto it last year. Shout out to Marco and the S10 family. I actually just finished the last of it right now. So Marco, I need the re-up. I need the re-up, Marco. So
how is that? Is it strong rum?
Yes, it's strong. It's strong. Strong white rum. You know. Nice. So for that, I raise my glass to you, sir, and everybody else listening. Much appreciated. And shout out to the Haitian massive out there listening right now. Sac passé. You know what it is. But for real, Marco, I need to re-up, Marco. And just so you know how we do this, we are not ranking each MVP. It's pretty random. We're just listing them out throughout the show. So there's no particular order, but we're going to start off with the Black Panther cast. They're the first MVP candidates, and yeah, we're going to discuss them as a collective that that was responsible for one of the highest grossing movies of all time. It's a superhero movie where 90% of the actors in the movie were black, setting records and helping to affect the culture in its own way. My MVPs, you know, is Ryan Coogler, the director, Chadwick Boseman, Lupita Nyong'o, Winston Duke, and the rest of the cast for Black Panther. Now, I'm not going to dive too deep into this one only because I thoroughly discussed all my viewpoints about the Black Panther experience earlier this year. I gave it its own podcast episode. So check that out if by chance you haven't peeped it yet. But Sean, what are your thoughts here regarding these candidates? MVPs or not?
Yo, bro, I'm still kind of coasting on the euphoria of the Black Panther, experience this year. Came straight out of left field to me. You know what I mean? Like, these times are so perplexing. You know what I'm saying? Because on the one side, and I think you and I already discussed this as well on another podcast, on the one side, you have old-fashioned discrimination and racist state of mind and that coming through in, you know, ways that no one expected. You know, like mm-hmm. these type of, you know, prejudices that we assume were long in the past. I mean, you figure that they were still lingering around, but, you know, with, the first black president, just in general, you felt the decline, you know, throughout the generations of, you know, that outright racism and hatred toward black people and other cultures. And then that manifested itself at the same time, like you said, where this black superhero movie obliterated all the other records of the superhero movies. So it came out of left field, like, wow, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like it was just, you know, that type of thing where it was supported by black folk and that's it. You know what I'm saying? Because let's be real, like, black people aren't the largest population in North America,
right?
But it was just embraced by all, you know what I mean? And it was a breath of fresh air. It was surprising, but it was beautiful to see at the same time. And the thing that was so beautiful about that is that it didn't perpetuate stereotypes about Africa that are said that, you know, that plague all other media. You know what I mean?
Right.
And all other media, black people from Africa are either cab drivers, you know what I'm saying? Or they, you know, work in bodegas, or, you know, or whatever the stereotype is.
Right,
you know what
right.
I'm saying? But mm. this was, you know, showing, you know, a country, a fictional country, but that, you know, was thriving beyond other countries in technology and wealth in natural resources. It was beautiful to see. It was beautiful to see it embraced, and it was amazing the impact it had throughout the year. You know what I'm saying? And I gotta say, like, Chadwick Boseman, it propelled his career. Well, I can't really say propelled his career, but it solidified him, I would say, as a star, as a solidified star. And it introduced you to a few other people. I don't remember their names, but you just said them. So those people, whoever, you know what I'm saying?
That's the liquor talking.
And yeah, man, it was a beautiful thing, man. And I got to say, I completely give you a stamp of co-signing that MVP for this year, bro.
No question. I mean, they had to get it just because, obviously, they had the biggest impact in the cinematic world this year. I mean, as you discussed, like the way the roles they were played, they're empowered. You know, they not only did they empower strong black figures, but the way they empowered, you know, strong black women, especially, it was really impressive. And I think one of the biggest things is just how they went into just painstaking detail for everything. Like, it was really impressive from the wardrobe and the hair, just like, you know, the the concentration of the accents, just everything. Like, it was crazy. Like, the detail that went into this was, it was almost breathtaking. And one of my other memories watching the movie, because I ended up watching it twice. I watched it the first time with me and the wife, and then the second time I brought my daughter. It was me and my daughter that wanted. She really wanted to see it, so I was like, you know what, all right, we'll go.
Nice.
And I remember after leaving the theater with my daughter, I think I told the story before, but we seen these kids coming out of the theater, and they're like arguing about, you know, I'm T'Challa. No, I'm T'Challa. No, I want to be T'Challa. And they're going back and forth. And Sean, none of them were black. Which I mean, to me, was like, wow, that's a, you know, subconsciously, that's a pretty big statement. You know what I mean?
That is dope, man.
Because normally, you know, when did you ever see that?
That's true.
And I thought that was really cool to see because, as you know, like, we never saw that growing up, like, in the movies or on TV. You know,
at all.
In terms of superhero movies or action movies, the blacks are always the sidekick or, you know, that big black guy or the villain. Or we're either, like, the first to die or die the most violently. You know what I mean? So to see, like, it completely, almost like a 180 in this sense, it was, you know, it was amazing. And
true.
You know, and it's funny because the rumors, hearing the rumors that are the next reincarnation of the Avengers after this one, the Avenger team is going to be led by Black Panther and Captain Marvel. They're essentially going to be replacing Iron Man and Captain America. Well, that's the rumor I see. You know, which is if that comes true, I mean, that's another strong statement you're making in Hollywood. The biggest entity, you know, in Hollywood right now is Marvel, and the fact that you can have a black man, a black African man, and a woman representing the strongest, you know, superhero team. It's a pretty big move.
Definitely, man.
You know, it's a pretty big move. And I don't know what else you want to add to this, but, like, I kind of just, you know, I just want to say this. Like, Marvel, obviously they believed in this movie because they gave it a $200 million budget. But,
definitely.
You know, but I honestly don't think they were expecting the movie to do the numbers that it did. There's no way they saw that coming. Basically, it topped out at over $1.3 billion on the box office.
I don't think anybody saw that one coming.
Oh, hell no. Hell no.
And on top of that, you can, like, you know, the love or the attention it got was, you know, well-deserved and real. And, you know, sometimes, like, you got situations where it's a sympathy thing. You know what I mean? Like, people are like, let's give some support to the black. You know, to the black whatever, fill in the blank. It could be the black show, the black this, the black that, the black restaurant, just to show we're down.
Mm-hmm.
But you know that wasn't the case because, like, for example, Luke Cage, which was garbage, clearly didn't get that same type of support because it was trash, and rightfully so, it's canceled. So it shows you the two ends of the spectrum. Black Panther, which got the well-deserved critical acclaim, and Luke Cage, which found itself in a dumpster, like it should, because it was garbage.
Let me ask you a question. Is Luke Cage one of the biggest disappointments for 2018? And the reason why I ask that is because, I mean, Sean, honestly, I haven't watched the season 2 of Luke Cage yet. And I plan on watching it just because I was so invested in season 1. I'm going to eventually get there. But, like, the only reason why I ask is because, yo, everybody I know ripped it to shreds, man. And to the point where I'm like, I am in no rush to go see this, to go watch this on Netflix now.
Yeah,
and,
bro.
And I think a big part of it is because of the Mark for Death Jamaican accents, like, from what I've been told.
Yeah, terrible,
like,
man.
Yeah, it just, I keep saying in 2018, how do you, like, at this stage, how do you mess that up, man? Like, you got YouTube. They're filming that in Harlem. Like, you can't just go across the borough to Brooklyn and just get some Jamaicans from Brooklyn to just, you know, try to be like a, almost like a mentor to some of these actors, is, you know, to be like, no, boss, rude boy, no, you can't do that, you know, like, I don't understand.
Yo, my G, it's a common belief that my Jamaican accent is terrible, right? But Lord knows, I would have sounded like Ox from Belly compared to them dudes on that show. I didn't even watch it either, to be quite honest with you, because truth be told, I didn't even like the first season. Like, I was like, it started strong. After episode 3, I'm like, all right, this story's kind of stagnant, you know? And I thought it was kind of garbage after a while, but with the and once what's his face died,
Cottonmouth.
Yeah,
I was hurt by Cottonmouth's death. I really was. I really like Cottonmouth.
Yeah,
he went away way too early.
Yeah, he went away way too early. Then the other dude, I can't remember what his name was. The other black.
Yeah, like his brother or something.
The other villain or whatever. Like him, I was like, I could do without you, man. He seemed like a 2018 show enough. You know what I'm saying? But all that said, I did see a few. Hassani was telling me about the Jamaican accident and showed me some clips. And I'm like, how do you, in this day and age, with so many people that can speak the language or at least imitate it, or not language, the accent and imitate it at the very least, you know, YouTube that can show you how Jamaican people talk and be like, after that guy in that audition just didn't nail that accent. You know what I'm saying? Like, how do you, like, I remember, like, this one clip of Hassani showed me, and the guy was like, you don't talk to me like that! Like, and it was like, what accent was that? Was that African? Was that Haitian? Was that, you know, Yugoslavian? Like, you don't talk to me like that! That's not how Jamaicans talk. So I was like, I don't know, man. It was a huge fail. Huge fail. All I have to say, I guess we're getting off on a tangent, but.
Right.
All that to say that, like, yo, Black Panther, man, well deserved. There was no sympathy support there to, you know, be the cool white person or whomever person and support a black film to show that, you know, you're progressive. It was legitimate. It was deserved. It was really, really dope. And definitely when you smash, you know, the box office, you definitely got to get that nod for 2018 MVP, man.
Yeah, 100%. It's one of the best movies of the year by far.
Yeah, definitely.
By far. All right, next up, you know, going on this Black Panther path for a second, there's a reason why I didn't mention him, but I'm going to mention him here. I think Michael B. Jordan is an MVP candidate. His portrayal of Eric Killmonger is one of the great displays that you'll ever see, you know, you're not only were sympathetic for the villain, but in some cases you might have been openly rooting for him. And I haven't felt that way about a villain since Heath Ledger played the Joker in The Dark Knight. His role widened his reach as a celebrity star. He became a sex symbol for the ladies. And while riding the wave from the success of this movie, he capped off the year by reprising the role of Adonis Creed for the movie Creed 2, which he fights Drago's son. I haven't seen that yet, unfortunately.
Me either, actually.
Yeah, so I got to get on that over the holiday break. So where does he fall in the category of MVP to you?
You know, Michael B. Jordan stay winning, though. Like, mm-hmm. He stays winning. His evolution, you know, it's impressive. You know what I'm saying? Like when you saw him as Wallace in The Wire, mm-hmm. you know, with the cornrows, the dirty braids, and you know what I mean, got shot up for being a snitch and sitting there with a drug addict. I mean, sometimes, you know, you see somebody, an actor, and you're like, yo, this guy's going to go places. But, you know, there were some actors like Idris, obviously, from The Wire that took off. And other than him, I can't really say no one jumps out at me as being anybody I figured would cross over and, you know, become a superstar.
Right.
But least of them, Wallace from The Wire, I did not see that shit coming a mile away. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he kept going, man. Hard work, perseverance, you know what I mean? I mean, I'm not going to pretend that I'm, you know, well versed on the details of the trajectory of his career. But, you know, clearly he kept grinding. Didn't help that he went to the gym and his body took to working out quite well. that definitely helped, I'm sure.
Oh yeah, I'm sure it did.
And man, I mean, with that said, I mean he seems to have that, you know, whatever it is that keeps the ladies the same thing Idris has and he has that just, you know, it gets him that female fan base, which is very, very important. And, I mean, he's definitely not taking his foot off the gas after Creed 1 and then, you know, getting this role in the Black Panther, which, you know, was, as we just discussed, you know, one of the biggest movies of the year. And his performance, like you said, it really, he wasn't eclipsed by the hero in that movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He was equally, as a villain, he was equally as compelling as the hero, even maybe more so.
Yeah.
Like you said, you know what I mean? And he definitely, he had quotables, you know, he had quotables and, you know, that one about, you know, drown me in the ocean and stuff like that, like my ancestors.
And, mm-hmm. And hey, I remember. Hey, auntie.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, like, so, I mean, he did a great job, you know, because if you really think about it, other than Thanos, Marvel superheroes are usually kind of trash, man.
Mm-hmm.
Or, sorry, not well, superheroes. Well, sorry, your, sorry the villains. I mean, yeah, they're, sorry, the villains. Like if you go back and you think about the villains in most of these Marvel movies, the villains are usually pretty forgettable, right? They don't usually put out a performance like, oh man, oh, like you said, Beyond, and that was Marvel, but Heath Ledger's Joker. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Other than and respect to Heath Ledger. Michael B. Jordan was no Heath Ledger as far as performance, but just as far as, you know, actually making an impact as a villain, you know, villains don't usually make an impact. They're usually just kind of adding to the plot for the hero. But he, you know, some would say he stole the show, man.
Yeah. Yeah, he killed the role. Like, honestly, no, and he falls on the line of, like, Scarface, you know, Heath Ledger's Joker. I'd say Bishop and Juice. And yeah.
good parallel.
Yeah, and I'm just gonna throw this one out for the real fans out there. Ice-T in New York Undercover when he played Danny Court. Danny Up.
Whoa.
We going way back, Sean. We going way back.
Man, Calvin brought that to the out of the parallel bag.
I brought back to the VHS days. I brought
you
it
were
back.
Saving that one. Goodness.
But you know, but like I said, in the movie, like you can feel his pain to the point that he made it relatable to you.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
And something he said I believe it was on Bill Simmons' podcast recently that he admitted that he had to basically go to therapy to shake that role off him. So,
are you serious?
Yeah. So it kind of tells you how dangerous it could be sometimes to be a method actor because.
Oh, he did the method acting type of thing?
Yeah, he did. So it's like, it kind of, you know how it goes, man. It kind of takes you down a path that, you know, you may not be, be able to resurface from, you know, you see a lot of times. So it's wow. When I heard that, I was like, I was kind of shocked. But then when you think about it, like, if you're doing the method acting to that, I'm like, yeah, I understand it. Because, you know, he went hard. He said for the longest while, he was like, even after the movie, he was like, he was just antisocial and, you know, like angry and stuff, and he's like, he realized, like, yo, I gotta go see a therapist.
Well, I tell you what, he shook that off because TMZ catches him with snow bunnies all the time now, being quite sociable. And when I say bunnies, it's plural because he got more than one on each arm. So yeah, he shook that off. But all I say, wow, I didn't know that though. I didn't know that that happened.
Yeah, but he definitely deserves the MVP because just like he stole the show. I think he stole the show, and as big as Chadwick Boseman was for, you know, for Black Panther, I think his success in the movie rivals it. You know, just even like I'm talking about like after, like, you know, just as a regular, you know, celeb, or I think it might even surpass it, to be honest with you. Cuz I think yeah, he's sure. More of like a star than Chadwick Boseman is, you know what I mean?
He is. And I tell you what, without him as the villain, that movie's not as big as it was.
Yeah, the storyline in the movie was real good to me, but yeah, but
it was good. But without him as the villain, drawing people in, also, I don't think it's a smash. It was.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't think so, bro. Like not to take anything away from the plot, not to take anything away from the movie itself,
mm-hmm.
But Michael B. Jordan as the villain. Killmonger, and people already saw clips of him and his shirt off with them kill bumps on him and all that nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was a draw, man. People wanted to see that movie for Black Panther, yes. Not saying that the movie itself, the movie itself wouldn't have been as good without him. It still would have been good, but.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been legendary without him.
he's a draw, man. Like, just like, for example, this is off on a tangent, but Idris Elba is the villain in the new Hobbs movie.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Now, you know how many people are going to go see the Hobbs movie because Idris Elba is the villain? Interchange Idris Elba with, I don't know, the dude, what's his, the Wood Harris.
Yeah.
As the villain. It's not the same thing. So, again, not to take away from, you know,
the movie
at all, but having him as the villain, man, that was a big draw too, man.
All right, so next up, we got the MCU, Marvel Cinematic Universe. So they released both Black Panther, which became one of the top 10 selling movies of all time. And if that wasn't enough, they somehow topped themselves by releasing the third installment of the Avengers, which is called Infinity War, where Thanos essentially took over the world or the universe. They did all that within a span of 3 months. The name Thanos created a, it almost became a verb like ether.
Sure.
And with the Avengers Endgame dropping in May, the MCU is belatedly in the middle of one of the greatest home run trots a film company's ever seen. MVP?
Definitely, man. Definitely. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll say, I don't know if it's just me. I don't know if it's my age. I don't know what it is, but I kind of felt like the MCU was losing their mojo. You know, like some of these, like before the Black Panther and then Avengers, Infinity War, some of these, like, what was it, the last Avengers movie there? What was it actually called? I don't even remember.
Oh, the Ultron, Age of Ultron? I
believe. Yeah. First of all, Ultron was such a shitty villain. Mm-hmm. Like, he was terrible. And Age of Ultron was forgettable. Like, you know, sometimes, like, you know, movies will come on the movie network, and you're like, oh, let me rewatch that. I never rewatch Age of Ultron. Mm-hmm. It was terrible.
I usually watch the first one, the first Avengers, before I watch the second one, actually.
The first one was dope.
Yeah.
But I found that a lot of these MCU movies, I was just like, I don't know. It doesn't have the same impact. Like, you know, the latest Spider-Man one and different ones. And I'm just like, ugh, I don't care. Like, I'm watching the movie like, yes, you're not going to die. I know it. He's going to lose. We all know it, you know? And it's just like, I don't know. I was just like, I don't care, man. And I'd be sitting there like, let me go refill the popcorn. Like, I didn't care,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I went into Infinity War expecting not to care. And that shit was dope. I saw that. I was like, wow. One, it was dope. Two, I don't know about you, bro. When them people started disappearing, Calvin.
Oh, yeah.
Hold on, before the fillers.
Before you continue, spoiler alert. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, exactly. When them people started vanishing, I said, okay, they'll let a few of the fillers vanish. So I expected, like, the bug lady there, Guardians of the Galaxy, the one that kind of, I don't remember what her name is.
Yeah.
But yeah, she could vanish. And then, you know, I don't know. I can't remember who exactly. But a few people could vanish here and there. But when I saw, half the friggin' Guardians of the Galaxy, no, not half, all the Guardians of the Galaxy vanished.
Mm-hmm.
And then Black Panther vanished. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, Spider-Man vanished?
Mm-hmm.
Bro, honestly, Calvin, I almost started welling up with tears in that movie, bro. I was like, what the hell is going on here, man?
Yeah, it was unbelievable.
But even before that, though, that was a great movie, man. Like, Thanos, the dude, what's his name again that played Thanos?
Josh Brolin?
Yeah, he did a great job.
Oh, he was incredible.
Great job. The storyline was great. You know, it was not overly, you know, overly super fantastical, but at the same time, it gave you enough action, it gave you enough suspense. Like, it was just really, really, really well done. And I got to say, I did not expect to enjoy it to the degree I did. I left that movie saying, when is the freaking sequel of this movie, man?
And you have to wait a year. That's something I saw.
Exactly.
I remember watching the movie, and I remember the whole theater was just You know, they always have like the bonus clips after the credits, right? After the first end credits. So you're always expecting, like, once the first wave of credits go, you're expecting the bonus. And then when the Infinity War, the name disappeared and disintegrated, and it just continued on with the credits, and everybody's like, what the fuck? What's going on? You know?
I know, man.
Everybody lost their mind, you know what I mean? And then, like, honestly, yeah, I think it was definitely the best movie that they did. To me, I think what was really impressive is how they incorporated, like, what was it? Like 60 to 70 different characters from the whole universe.
Yeah, man.
It was done smoothly. It wasn't choppy. As you said, the storyline was amazing. You were able to follow it even if you didn't see every Marvel movie, which for me, I didn't, you know, before that, I didn't watch Doctor Strange. I ended up watching it after I watched The Avengers. I still haven't watched the Guardians of the Galaxy. I probably never will.
Oh, Calvin, you gotta watch that, man.
Really?
Yeah, that's
okay.
Good.
All right, I'll take your
part word. Part one is good. Part two, but part one is really good, man.
Okay, I'll take your word for it. I just wasn't interested in it, but
me too, I wasn't. When I first saw it, I saw the stupid raccoon and all that stuff. I'm like, I don't want to watch this garbage. But, you know, I saw it and wanted to watch it, and I went, and surprisingly, yeah, it's really good.
It threw me for a loop because, honestly, like, even the ones that I didn't follow, I was able to still stay with the storyline.
Yeah.
Like, they just did an incredible job. Like, I think what they've done for action movies now, like, they've completely changed the game. And I know it's a drawback for some people that, you know, that believe now that every big budget movie is going to be a superhero movie now, but you can't argue with how well most of these movies, like, they've been done, you know? And for me, like, as a comic book guy growing up, it's kind of cool seeing some of these movies come to life in a proper way.
It's true.
Like, and here's a question I'll ask you. How badly have they destroyed DC Comics? My God.
It's an onslaught.
It's not fair. It's not a fair fight.
It's an onslaught.
It's not a fair
fight.
But
I'll tell you what, though. What's it called? I don't even remember the name of their group now. You got Justice the League? Avengers. What do they call it again?
Justice League.
Justice League, yeah. Who are really boring, by the way. But the Justice League movie was actually pretty good, man. So
people liked it. I thought it was just okay. It didn't do anything for me, really.
I thought it was good, maybe because my expectations were so low. Oh, they were low, man. Because I wasn't a fan of Batman versus Superman.
That was garbage.
Oof, that was trash. Wonder Woman, I gotta admit, I don't want to sound like a chauvinist because I'm definitely not, but I didn't even watch it, to be honest with you.
Actually, that was pretty good.
I
liked it. It was good.
That was actually
better than Justice League.
Was it?
Oh yeah, yeah.
I was never a Wonder Woman fan. Her and her stupid invisible plane and all kind of nonsense. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, your plane's invisible, but you're not invisible. So, I mean, you're sitting around. Even if I don't know where a plane is, I see you. You know what I'm saying?
You don't like her lasso of truth, Sean?
Yeah, lasso of truth. Yeah, bro. Honestly, that's the first time I ever even heard of lasso of truth. I never even gave Wonder Woman enough time to even know what the lasso did. I just knew it was a lasso and that's it. But maybe I should check it out because she was really good in Justice League.
Yeah, no, it was good. It was good.
And Justice League was pretty good. I got to say, it was way better than I expected. But that is the outlier generally. Actually, I like Man of Steel too.
Did you?
I did.
Well, you know what? I like the Batmans with Christian Bale. Like, those Batmans were
good.
Yeah, those ones were awesome. The ones with Ben Affleck, nah. But
yeah, sure.
And then you know what? I mean, I don't know how this movie's gonna be because I haven't watched it obviously yet. It's not out as we're recording this podcast. It hasn't been out yet. But Aquaman, at least according to the trailers, it looks decent. Based on the trailers, but who knows, right? You can be fooled by the trailers, so.
Yeah, I'm probably not going to watch that movie. I won't even lie.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. But, you know.
I mean, Calvin, we're so busy these days, man. For me to go out and actively say, I'm going to spend 2 hours watching this movie, it has to be.
It's got to pull you.
Something I really want to watch, man. Mm-hmm. And I never cared about Aquaman. Even growing up, I'm like, hey, he swims. He controls, you know, the aquatic life.
Yeah, you know, it's weird. It's when it comes to, like, the cartoons, DC Comics is probably better than Marvel. But in terms of the movies, it's completely the other way around.
Yeah, it's true.
Completely the other way around. But but with the success of Black Panther and Infinity War, like, think about this. MCU has 4 movies in the top 10 highest grossing movies of all time. And they've accomplished this in 6 years.
Shoot. That is crazy.
Yeah. They're the kings of Hollywood right now. And especially after seeing a movie like that. Like I don't think anybody who watched Infinity War cannot wait for Endgame at this point. Like, we're all waiting for that.
For sure.
You know, and like, then, sorry, go ahead.
No, like, that's the kind of thing, like, I'd be like, all right, I got to take the day off of work. Something like that. Like, I mean, I wouldn't, but if it came down to that, like, hey, we're only showing it one day, I'd be like, awesome, I'm not coming in today, man.
I know, and the fact that we have to wait basically a year for it to come back out, it's like, it's killing you. It's killing you slow, you know, because you want to see how that ends off. All right, so next up, we got hip-hop. Hip-hop's made a resurgence album-wise that we haven't seen in years. Almost every major hip-hop artist, new school, semi-old school, and old school alike, has come out of the woodworks. From Cardi B, Travis Scott, J. Cole and J. Rock, to Meek Mill, Tory Lanez, and Nicki Minaj, to Lil Wayne, Eminem, Kanye, Nas, Jay-Z, and Iggy Azalea. Okay, I'm joking with Iggy.
I was like, wait, what did I miss?
I just wanted to see if you're paying attention, Sean.
Where was I?
and even the underground heads had some heat on them, like Fonte's No News Is Good News, Royce the 5'9's The Book of Ryan. And even though I haven't heard Nipsey Hussle's latest victory lap, but so far I'm hearing really good things about it. And then Black Thought, you know, with his Stream of Thought volumes 1 and 2 that he came out with this year. Volume 2, I think, just recently came out. We couldn't choose all of them to discuss as MVP candidates outside of a few, but I had to give the genre of an MVP, you know, nod this year. What are your thoughts, sir?
Yeah, definitely, man. I'll say it was a dope year. I don't really, a lot of times, look for albums the way I used to. You know what I mean? Like, you used to be like, oh, he's dropping? Oh, I can't wait till he drops. Me, I hear someone's dropping, I'm like, whatever. I mean, I'll catch it when it comes out. And then I'll hear a buzz about an album, and then I'll check it out. You know, but I'll say, like, in general, though, I think that hip-hop that we consider to be, you know, something that you want to listen to, this was a good year for that, and it was a good year for that other shit. No, I'm kidding. But a good year for the other, more marketable stuff. You know what I mean? Like, it was a great year, period. Like, you ran down a lot of names. There's, you know, even some dudes that, like, because when it comes to new artists, my ear is not to the street no more. Like, I think I kind of
been phased out.
Say again?
You've been kind of phased out.
Yeah, because I'm like, ain't nobody new coming I'm going to like. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, and you should be. We're at the stage now where it's not, you know, any new artist that comes out, it's not really for us.
Yeah, exactly. Now, you know what I mean? But you got dudes that are still dope. You know, you do got, you know, Conway and them dudes, and, you know, those guys are still dope. Mm-hmm. Them dudes from Buffalo.
Yeah.
J. Cole got this guy. What's his name? Jeez, what's this kid's name?
I know you're talking about too. In my mind.
Yeah, I can't remember his name. It's a short name, like JB or JD or something like that. But anyway, he's dope. Like, I heard him, I'm like, man, that kid is dope. And I heard about him first, and I said, I'm not bothering. But then I heard him, like, yo, the dude is dope, man. Mm-hmm. So, like, all I have to say, like, yeah, man, like, I think that some real hip hop came out this year. You know, you had a lot of dope albums. You had a lot of albums that, like, sometimes, like, you know, dope albums come out and they're forgettable. You know what I mean? But you have, like, the albums this year that came out and a lot of the hip-hop that came out, I think they'll stand the test of time, man. I think they'll stand the test of time.
Yeah, and, you know, and I hate to keep doing this, but, you know, to keep referencing my previous episodes, but I'm going to steal a point, my own point that I made, and just to say that it's interesting to see the parallels between 1988 and 2018 when you look at the quality and the quantity of music between those two specific years. Now, I'm not sure if the albums will foster classics like that year did, but yeah. There are a lot of similarities, especially, you know, when you throw in the backdrop of a classic movie being based out in Africa that also affected the culture, like Black Panther this year and Coming to America back in 88, you know. Ooh. But
spooky.
But, yeah, it's weird, but like hip hop had such a strong year with all the releases, and some of them weren't all bullseyes. It's gonna hurt me to say this, because as much as I love Nas, he's my favorite rapper, and every time somebody
before you continue, block your ears, please, or press mute, turn down the volume. All right, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say was that every time somebody like yourself takes a shot at him, I want to go all out on you like Liam Neeson and Taken. but you know, and it wasn't really his fault. I just thought Kanye dropped the ball production wise on his album. Like he had the chance to make it a legendary album, especially when it's with the 7 song concept. But he just made it decent, you know. So I thought that was a miss. That was like a single or a double when it should have been a home run. It should have been a grand slam. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
but it had nothing to do really with Nas. I think it was just more to do with the production. I thought Kanye kind of dropped the ball with him.
Yeah, it's true.
But yeah, but
you know, Nas needs some good beats to mask his monotone.
Sean,
definitely.
Don't you do this? what was your some of like your surprise albums that kind of surprised you that when you were listening to, you're like, holy crap! Like I wasn't expecting to be like this. If you could think of some off the top of your head.
Get into this a bit later, but Meek Mill's was surprising because my expectations were low. I thought that Pusha T's album was dope.
Well, we'll save that. Save those
ones. Yeah, we'll save that. Pusha's album was dope. J. Cole's album was dope.
Yeah, J. Cole's is nice.
I'm sure I'm forgetting something. There was just a lot of music this year, man. A lot of music.
Yeah, I think T.I.'s album was actually pretty good. I was actually surprised by that. I think it was called Dime Trap, I think it was called that.
No, I didn't even listen to it.
Yeah, that one, I mean, there was a lot of albums, man. But that one, I was actually pleasantly surprised with that one.
T.I. Quiet as Kept is underrated, man.
Very much so. I've always liked T.I., man.
Rap his ass off, bro.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think if it wasn't for his bids, his continuous bids and, you know, in and out of jail, like I think that kind of stopped his momentum, because I think he's really talented, man. He's got everything to go. The lyrics, he's got the production always lines up nicely with what he's got to say. And you know, being in, you know, this social climate that's kind of adjusted everybody's thinking in the last few years, or at least the majority of people's thinking in the last few years, I think he's kind of been somebody that's kind of been swept up under that wave too. And it's reflective in this album, you know.
Sure.
And Royce the 5'9" is another one to me that album was, The Book of Ryan was, I wasn't expecting it to be that nice. Not to say I don't like Royce, but that album was dope. Bobble Boat, was it Bobble Boat?
Bobble Boat, yeah.
Ooh, that one was sick. Especially J. Cole's verse. Whew, that album.
It was.
Oh, that was
and
fun.
I remember that too, because I think I even talked about that in another podcast, how I wanted to go to Bablo because I had family in Windsor, and Bablo, I believe it's in Detroit, and it was raining that day. I couldn't go to Bablo, so that really it strikes a nerve for me, because I remember that trauma. I was really looking to get on that Bablo boat and go to the amusement park. But anyway, that's another topic.
Yeah, no doubt. But yeah, like I said, man, the whole genre is like. Yeah, it's just it's the new wave right now. Like hip hop is the new rock and roll. It's the most popular music of all genres of music right now. And a year like this, it only helps the genre go forward. It only pushes it further.
Hey, you know what else too? And I might have to throw these guys in as MVPs music wise, but you know who kind of had a good year too, I gotta say, is these friggin' Migo characters.
Yeah, well, yeah, they did.
Like, that dude Takeoff, he dropped a solo album, which I only listened to bits and pieces of it. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, people would have thought it was in garbage. It was not bad, man.
Yeah.
And, again, that dude Offset, man. That dude can freaking rap, man.
Yeah.
I'm not crazy about Quavo. Everybody loves him. I think he's the most boring of the three, personally.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, man, I mean, They put out some stuff. There was a lot of collabo albums this year that my son was going crazy over. Some of them, I'm like, you know, it really isn't bad. Like, Future dropped this album with this dude, Juice WRLD. Mm-hmm. I mean, Future, I gotta say, he's kind of lost his allure, I would say, in my opinion anyway. Mm-hmm. But he was still putting out some decent music. Young Thug was putting out some decent music. Mm-hmm. People was putting out some music, man.
Yeah, like I said, this is the year. This is the year of hot music, man. Like, you can't deny it. And I mean, we're not even including like the mixtapes that was out this year too. You know, we didn't even touch that part of the conversation. But like, hip hop was a winner. Hip hop was definitely a winner as a whole for 2018. All right, next up, we're gonna make this a two man category here, and you know, obviously, and you'll understand why. This next category for MVP, I would have to say, is Drake and Pusha T. So where do I begin? You know what? I'm not even going to give you the full rundown. I'll just give you the cliff notes for those who weren't aware. So Kanye's inspired project to release 5 albums in the month of June from his Good Music label. He releases Pusha T's Daytona album first out of the lab. On that album, he takes a shot at Drake. Drake comes back later that evening or that night, I believe, and drops the Duppy freestyle, going back at Kanye and Pusha T, which was nice. Can't deny that. Mentions Pusha T's wife by her government name. Pusha T comes back out with the story of Adidon, a scathing diss record that some people believe hit some ether type levels that promptly lands Drake his first official public L. Drake comes back with the Scorpion album, 25 tracks, which is like would have been a double CD back in the 90s if CDs were still around. But with God's plan, Nice for What, In My Feelings, and Talk Up, well, especially In My Feelings, which turns, you know, into a challenge that went viral, and then toured lavishly off the success of the album. I mean, I'm at the stage where I'm like, you know, at the stage of my life, I'm legitimately tired of hip hop beefs. Even though this was entertainment, sorry, this was entertaining, and it still seems to be going on with both camps to this day. But personally, I don't care about that. The reason why both of these guys get MVP to me is because Pusha T put out a really dope album, and he swung up against, you know, one of hip hop's Goliaths and gave him a body blow. And Drake, even though he took that L, he still came back with the biggest selling album and toured from that project, all while putting more nails in Kanye's coffin. What are your thoughts? What are your thoughts, Sean, on these two characters getting the MVP nod?
I wholeheartedly agree. First of all, I'll disagree with the tired about beef comment. I'm not tired of the beef. That's for sure. I like the beef. I'm not here for the beef going beyond wax. I don't want anybody to get hurt over it. I don't necessarily love people talking about killing each other over stuff like that.
Right.
But, you know.
You just wanted to stick to music.
Stick to music. Good old slander. Good old insulting someone's manhood and, you know, bringing skeletons out of closets. I'm there for all of that. Mm-hmm. With that said, I thought that this was an incredible beef because, one, it seemed to come out of nowhere, and I'll say come out of nowhere because, you know, you knew that Drake and Pusha had that beef kind of brewing somewhat, but when Push came out and threw that shot at Drake on his album, and then Drake came out with a Duppy freestyle, you figured that, okay, case closed, the body bag is zipped up, this is done, you know, put the tag on Push's foot, on his toe, and that's it. Mm-hmm. You know? And when Push came back with his diss track, and then on top of that came back with the art that people thought was, you know, somebody taking out their artistic with
Forgot
it,
when actually
it was research that Push brought that out, and Push was bringing skeletons out of closets. Like, Push went out to, he dug deep. He went into the mausoleum for them skeletons, bro. Mm-hmm. Like, he brought some skeletons out of that, you know? changed the path of a lot of, you know, Drake's business, changed the path of Drake's album, changed, you know, and it was a true David and Goliath moment where you were like, yo, I guess this isn't just a fable. David can beat Goliath sometimes, because no one ever, ever, ever expected. People were writing Pusha's obituary after Drake's diss track.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They sent it in for publishing. It was on fresh. It was on a newspaper stand. You know, and they had to print their retraction the next day after Push dropped his, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mind you, I mean, Push's, it was maybe a lot less necessarily lyrical sparring than just bringing out real dirt on a dude and putting it out there.
Mm-hmm.
But with that said, though, I mean, man, it was captivating. Like, beef sometimes, like, I don't know about you, sometimes a beef takes place and I'm like, they had beef? Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
I just think there's so much beef. Like, there's so much different beefs going on, like, over the years. You just, you can't keep track, most of the times is you're just like, I don't have the time to, like, keep up with
that. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, like, I don't care. But anyway, with that said, it was compelling. It wasn't fickle beef. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Because everybody could relate to what were the hot button issues. Drake mentioned Pusha's wife's name. Ah, bro, you did that for real? You know?
Mm.
So you're like, eesh. Every man could be like, don't say my wife's name, bro.
Right.
Like, that's a hot button issue if you're sitting there and you go and you're at a work dinner party with the dude that, you know, and you're like, yeah, buddy, just like Mildred. Hey, don't talk about Mildred. anybody can relate to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And then when Drake, you know, when it's like when Push came back after that and said the things he said about his baby mom and his, you know, then you had, like, people on both sides of the fence, like, oof, man, that was, you know, have an extreme reaction to that. Mm-hmm. But everybody could say, yeah, that was pretty much a knockout, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And then for Drake to come back and rise from the dead like the phoenix from the ashes, you know what I mean? Then put out one of the biggest tours of the entire year. You're like,
making up with people as we go along, like, with, you know, bringing Meek Mill on stage, bringing Chris Brown on stage, and
he
made it an event. Like, he basically took over like arenas and didn't have like a band. It was just basically just him on like the size of like the basketball court. And
that
was just it. Maybe a DJ. That was it. That was it. And that basically took over, you know, the culture for like a 3-4 month period.
Yeah, man. Like, I went to that show.
Okay.
We took a signing when we were in New York Labor Day.
Oh, you saw it in New York? Okay. Oh,
yeah,
that must have been nice.
We saw it in Brooklyn at the
the Barclays Center.
Yeah.
Oh, that must have been nice.
Mm. It was dope, man. It was a dope show, and I mean, that was my first time going to a big show like that outside of Montreal.
Right.
And them New Yorkers were going crazy for the boy, man.
Mm-hmm.
And Migos, they were, the show was there. But I mean, the show itself, I mean, Migos, I like their music. They're not the greatest performers, but the show itself, though, man, oh, man, it was an amazing show, man. Like, Drake is really on that level of a hip hop show. You don't see hip hop shows like that, man. Like, mm-hmm. with all of the special effects and you know, his stage presence and it was just super dope, man. And it was a win. Like, if you ask anybody what's the biggest hip hop concert of the year, well,
there's no question.
Yeah. You know? And that's all off the precipice of the Mike Tyson to, was it Larry Holmes he knocked out in 30-something seconds? Who was he?
Michael Spinks, I think.
Michael Spinks, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that was after the Michael Spinks Pusha T disc. Like, that, no one should have got up from that, man.
Yeah. Like, you know what I compare it to? And, you know, we kind of discussed this offline yesterday. I compare their battle because both of them, you know, both of them ended up being the winner, right?
Yeah.
In their own way, they ended up being the winner. And I compared it yesterday to when we were talking to the Tyson Fury and DeAndre Wilder
fight.
And anybody, I didn't see the fight, but just from the highlights and different things that I saw, it was a back and forth battle. I'm not saying one is DeAndre and the other one's Tyson. I'm not even going back and forth with it with that part, except for this part. When DeAndre Wilder threw that blow because he was losing the fight, when he threw that blow and put Tyson Fury on his back, the way he put him on his back, everybody thought, oh my God, this guy knocked him out. It was over. And then, like the Undertaker, the guy rose up and then just started and then controlled the round after that. Like
that was freaky, man.
It was like one of the craziest things you'll see. It was that one. I mean, that was hella entertaining. But that to me, if you want to put an analogy on it, analogy twist on it, that beef was similar to that fight. Both of them were essentially the winner, not just technically, but like, you know, they hugged it out. It was like, that was like, both camps, you left both camps. You're like, man, you know, we didn't get the win, but man, this was entertaining. We can do this again. You know what I mean? And
yeah,
you know, they could definitely live to see another day. And to me, that's what this kind of like this back and forth, both of them. Usually, you know, when you see a beef, even Nas and Jay-Z, like, even though that was a classic and you could say Nas won, but Jay-Z, you know, Jay-Z took a little bit of a hit from that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
But it's like, but this in this case, you can't really say one or the other took a hit. Like as bad as the levels that of the skeleton pulling that Pusha T did. Like when you look back on it now, people don't even talk about it. Like the way Drake recovered, he recovered to the point where people don't even bring it up anymore.
He recovered to the point where, as far as he's concerned, it almost didn't even happen.
Yeah, it's like it's almost like watching somebody trip and fall, and then they just get up and continue walking, and then you're like, wait a minute, did they trip? and that's a testament, honestly, to him and his camp. Like they're a strong team, man. Because again, most people would not come back from that, and
that's true.
People may have ripped him for not going back at Pusha after, you know, the story added on, but you know, at the end of the day, it was a smart move. And we're hip hop fans here, and we know what hip hop is fueled off of. You know, it's fueled off of competition. But at the same time, this is the music business. Music business. At that level that Drake is at this stage of his career, he has to play the long game.
That's true.
You know, and you know, and as much as hip hop fans were clamoring to like for him to go back at him right away and all this stuff, it's like as a businessman, I understand the move. We saw the example of it with 50 and Ja Rule. Like I still believe if Ja Rule never responded to 50 Cent or he cut it off at a certain point, his career would have pretty much still been intact. But
it's true. You're right.
You know, but with the wave that came after him and the label, you know, for 50 and other reasons, of course, you know, like remember, Sean, people went from loving Ja Rule to being like, what the hell are you talking about? I never said I like Ja. Less than 2 years later. You know what I mean? So but it's like, but Ja didn't play the long game. It's like, so it's like, you know, like you have to kind of study this. Like he had to be strategic with this, with the way he came back off of this shot. And like I said, like we don't even talk about it anymore. You know, at the end of the day, like Pusha wins because he got of those five album projects that Kanye was trying to put out. He definitely got the best of Kanye's work in regards to like that album release stuff, which
is true.
Which is like the concept, the idea. I absolutely loved it, but like you know, but it just didn't. I wasn't crazy about the final results of it. You know, but the album put him back on the map. Like that album was dope. Like you can't, like as a hip hop fan, you can't deny the album was dope. You know, and then like I said again with Scorpion, and we discussed this. We were discussing this in the summer, you know, and then Drake, you know, basically kind of confirmed it for us in that LeBron interview. It made him go back and put that energy towards, you know, towards like his album, and you can tell
some of the hottest tracks came as a result of that beef.
Yeah. Yeah, and as a fan of music, we're all better for it. You know what I mean? Because that's all you want at the end of the day. You want good music to listen to. You know.
Yeah, definitely. And I gotta say, man, like, I think that this cemented what we already knew, is that like there's certain tiers, certain levels of superstar, right? So you got like, you know, different superstars and different people that go from superstar and are kind of teetering on mogul. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And yo, Drake is kind of has, he's kind of sliding into that mogul like position because, like, think of it. Everybody benefits from aligning with Drake. He's that big. He's that huge that who, like, Meek Mill benefits from squashing the beef and being cool with Drake. Chris Brown benefits from it. It's not like you can be like, F him, who's he? You can't say that no more. Mm-hmm. Like, Drake is huge. And Drake, to be honest with you, Drake is huge. And Drake isn't even truly maximizing all his potential. And when he taps into it, like, you know, like the movies where, you know, like a superhero will be able to do something and his sensei's like, you're only maximizing half of your potential. Like, that's really what this is. Because think about it. Drake, who already has, he's already flexed his acting chops, right? Mm-hmm. Can you imagine Drake in a block, in a movie? Mm-hmm. Like, Drake in a movie. You know, and I'm not talking about just being like, hey, I'm going to go out and be in a movie, but like being in a movie that is actually, you know, has blockbuster potential with great director and great writers and, you know, great supporting cast.
Or like a Judd Apatow type of movie, too. You could put him in something like that, too, where it's like good writing and, you know.
Exactly. Like, Drake has that potential to even be bigger than he is right now, because even like when you saw him on Saturday Night Live and, you know, and hosting the ESPYs and all that stuff, like, he has that personality. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think, like, in 2018, Drake showed you, you can't kill me, man. You can't. He's like Jason in that movie. Like, you thought you ran over him with your car. You know what I mean? You hit him with the axe in the middle of his chest. He was down. You thought he was lifeless, and you hugged your significant other and cried, and you're like, oh, we're safe now. And then he rose up in the background. He was still there. You cannot kill him. Yeah. He's too big, man.
You started the car and you looked in the rearview mirror like, ah, shit.
Seriously. It didn't make any sense. You heard his skull crack when you drove over him, but somehow the guy's still alive, man. Like, you cannot kill this dude. He's too big, man.
Next up, we got Meek Mill. This MVP is near and dear to Sean's heart. I'll tell you that right now.
Oh, yes. Meek Millie.
He came out of jail and put together, you know, a lot of interviews talking about his story. He put together some great live performances. Example, like the one he did on the BET Awards. I think it was the championship song, actually, now that I think of it. And the biggest thing is not even so much the album, which I'll get to in a second, but the biggest thing is that he's actively made the rounds trying to be the advocate for prison reform.
Yeah.
And his album Championships falls in the spirit of this new path. Now, I know you're advocating for him to be MVP for 2018, and what are your reasons why?
Mainly because he got rid of that deadweight Nicki Minaj. No, I'm kidding. Well, it's true. I'm kidding about that. But, all right. After Meek went to jail and what have you, which, you know, was for absolute nonsense, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I didn't have high expectations of Meek Mill, because Meek, before he went to jail, was everything that he had all the superficial qualities that I deem as being what makes hip hop so garbage today. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Meek Mill will be on Instagram with, you know, the wad of the money phones. You know what I mean? And sitting there with chains hanging off his ear, and while he's counting money and has a girl on his right hand and a bottle on his left. Like, it was all like, yes, Meek, we understand. You're a famous rapper. I know you have money. I know you have jewels. I remember because you posted it yesterday. I get it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And every rap song will be about that, and how he's so rich, and how he's yada yada. It just, it was so repetitive, and it was just like Meek Mill was a caricature of what hip hop should, of what hip hop artists are supposed to be. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And when he went through what he went through, and he came out like and proved himself to be a changed man, like so much more mature. Like it's amazing. He went in being on the same, like I said, the poster boy of fickle hip hop values. It's like, remember those video games where you can have a cheat code and, you know, you can say like, hey, like, you know, video games where you build up your character, mm-hmm. and hey, I'm on level 1, but I put a cheat code and now I'm on level 50.
Right.
Like that's what he did, man. Like he came out and he was so profound, or not so grounded, I would say. Mm-hmm. So grounded. And all that fickle stuff that seemed to be all he focused on before he went in, he didn't care about that no more, you know? Mm-hmm. And he was really, his aim was, like you said, shining a light on the need for prison reform, shining a light on the system that is designed to entrap people and bring them down a wormhole that they can't get out of, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And he made it his business to... And, it, you know, sometimes those type of things are manufactured too, right? You do the rounds and the media rounds, but it was, you could tell it was a genuine priority of his.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And then he dropped an album where, you know, I like we were talking about that yesterday, like Meek Mill's flow, it was almost like, you know, you could cut and paste his flow on any song to another, and it was always the same high energy. Like, okay, Meek, I get it. I it's always the same, you know what I mean?
Right.
But man, like he, not only his content was so deep on this album. Okay, I won't say deep because I mean, I don't necessarily want, you know, he's not Talib Kweli. I'm not going to say that, but it was like just so much more. It was a lot deeper than you know,
than previous albums, for sure.
Yeah, and even a lot of the hip hop out there, or a lot realer. That's it. That's what I'm looking for. It was just a real. He was just rapping about his real life, real experiences, real things that are going on in the world today. Because there's a lot going on in the world today, bro.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, like with this whole Trump, you know, with Trump and everything that's going on in the U.S. and like, there's a lot going on, man. And people left Meek for dead. After the Drake beef and Meek Mill, he didn't get Ja Ruled, but it was
pretty close.
It was close, you know. He became the butt of the joke. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like you had like Jimmy Fallon with his, like he was like, hey, there's a Meek Mill, hey, you know, mm-hmm. There would be a Meek Mill joke on the Tonight Show,
right?
But you know what I mean? Like Meek Mill was the butt of the joke,
right.
But, yo, he came out and proved everybody wrong. I said, yo, let me show you what I got. And came out with a banger of an album, man.
Yeah, I think, well, beyond that, I think him trying to be the you know, the advocate for for prison reform, it just kind of shows you the maturity and the growth that he's, you know, that he's had now, you know, and the fact that he's using his platform to speak for the voiceless, like, you know, yeah. You can see how the last 4 years regarding, you know, the police brutality has changed the mindset of how some entertainers are using their platforms now. But I'll be honest, like I'm actually, you know, while I was like surprised initially to see this coming from Meek, you know, but I'm not, because you never know how the ripple effects of that of these situations or personal things can wake somebody up, right?
That's true.
So I think he's like the, you know, the definite example of that. The other thing that I want to touch on that, you know, is probably kind of strays from this a little bit, you know, can we address for a minute how mind-blowing it was to watch, like, all of these professional sport owners supporting Meek Mill?
Yo, can we discuss that? Was like the bizarro world. I was like, what is going on here, man?
Like, it made no sense to me, including the owner of the 76ers. The guy had a helicopter waiting for him the moment he stepped out of jail. And had him courtside at the Sixers playoff game that evening. Like,
yeah.
Like I want to know, like, how are these guys friends to that degree? Does anybody have an answer
to
that?
But just a quick comment on that. I heard something the other day. I don't know if it was an interview he did somewhere where he said that I think it was the Sixers owner, perhaps, or Bob Kraft. I can't remember who it was, but one of them were like, "Meek,
Bob Kraft,
you're not going to jail for popping a wheelie. That doesn't make any sense."
Right.
And he's like, "No, I'm telling you. You know what I mean?" And after that ended up sticking, it really, really was compelling to these billionaire owners because they're like, wow, in my circle, this wouldn't be a problem. Doesn't matter if this person's on probation, you're caught popping a wheelie, it's easily swept under the rug with your good lawyer, you know?
Yeah.
But they saw how, well, with this black celebrity, it doesn't work that way. Like, this bullshit is really sticking.
Like, he got railroaded for sure.
Yeah, it was eye-opening to them.
Yeah. It was just crazy. Like, I just need some questions answered, Sean. Like, I don't normally care about how people form their friendships, but I want to find out about that one. Like, I want to know how was he friends with so much owners? Like, it isn't. Do all rappers entertain this kind of friendship with all of these professional owners?
I don't know. Like, you know, like, it's kind of like when you see like a young, really, really attractive lady with an old man. You're like, okay, I see what this is. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But like you said, with this, you're like, I don't have any clue how this manifested itself, man. Like, how did this come about? I agree. I'd like someone to show me clips, highlight clips of how that relationship blossomed between Meek and these billionaire owners. I don't know.
Sean,
what was the starting point for that?
Again, the man had a helicopter waiting for him outside of jail.
I don't get it, bro.
I don't understand. And this is after he got back-to-backed.
I don't get it.
I need answers. I need answers for that. Somebody tell me, please. I need to know. So that was part one of the MVPs of 2018. Thank you so much for tuning in. Part two is up next. So go ahead and check that out right now. You're already on the roll with me. You know, why stop now? You can continue to check out the podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, as well as Google Play under the South Sharav name. And check out southsharav.com to listen to all of my past episodes. It's the AF Podcast with Cal C and South Sharav Radio. All right, I'll see you in a few.